Coming up on this episode of the Email Design Podcast, we're going to debate modular design in email. Microsoft released a brand new email client in its Office 365 Outlook web app. Woo, that's a mouthful, and it's just as bad as it sounds. We'll explore its many quirks, and we're going to break down a simple new fix for Yahoo Mail. All this and more coming up on this jam-packed edition of the Email Design Podcast. Stay tuned. Thank you for joining us, folks, and welcome to episode number 2 of the Email Design Podcast. We are your hosts. I am Kevin Mandeville, better known as @KevinGotBounce on Twitter.
And I am Jason Rodriguez. I'm on Twitter as @RodriguezJ.
And be sure to catch every single episode of the podcast at emaildesignpodcast.com. Full show notes and links to everything we discuss will be available there. You can also subscribe to our email newsletter and never miss an episode of the podcast. Get it delivered right to your inbox. You can also catch the podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes. All the links are on emaildesignpodcast.com. Stitcher's coming on its way. You're working on that, right, Jason?
I am, absolutely.
So let us know if you'd like the podcast to be anywhere else. We'll be sure to put it out there for you. And be sure to tweet along with the hashtag Email Design Podcast. We'll be following along the conversation there and interacting with you guys. So let us know what you like, what you don't like, opinions on topics that we talk about, and all that good stuff. So be interactive, people. Sharing is caring. All right. With that being said, let's dive right into it. Jason, kick it off for us.
Yeah, lots of good news in the email world this month. Big one was a good friend of the show, Brian Graves, recently published an article on Smashing Magazine, popular website, about email workflow and working with modular design. It was a very interesting article. Brian's definitely on the cutting edge when it comes to email and process. So it was great to get a look at some of the stuff he uses, his workflow, how he kind of builds out pattern libraries for his emails, some of the tools he uses. It was all around great read. I definitely recommend checking this one out. One of the things I really liked was seeing how he uses a static site generator, in this case something called Middleman, that takes in and kind of eats up these templates that he has set up and builds the email for him. And it allows you to use some cool things like Sass for writing your CSS, as well as some YAML front matter to kind of configure how you want that content pulled in. It was very, very, very cool. I know, Kevin, you've been looking very heavily at email workflow and process lately, so I'd love to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to sit down with Brian and discuss this workflow in great detail, and he probably has the most complex workflow out of anybody, and not just because it's not just him. He has a whole team sort of using this process at his agency. So a bunch of people are involved in this process, which is really cool. And it's very similar to what we talked about in the first episode with Dan Denny's email process and workflow that he posted, and it uses a static site generator. It's a similar sort of idea. So I love how modular things are. It keeps things very fast to develop. And he uses Sass. And one of the things that I like about Sass that he uses is for some of the attribute selectors for the media query. So he can simply just wrap all of the styling classes, you know, with the attribute selector on the outside, which is really, really cool. And yeah, everything's very organized by putting things in partials and compiling it together in the post, compilation, so to speak. And he does advanced things beyond that too. It's just using Grunt to test his emails, to inline CSS and certain functions like that. So it's very, very organized. It's very, very modern workflow. I know we use Middleman here at Litmus as a static site generator for our own website, which is pretty interesting, and it works pretty well. So I think this is going to be the process moving forward that we're going to see a lot of email developers adopt, especially if you need to pump out a lot of email. And modular design is really just helps you with that. It keeps things organized. It keeps your entire team on the same page. I guess the only major downside I see about modular design is it can take away some of the customization of design. It can, you know, perhaps just kind of get you in too much of a template focused mindset, and you don't always innovate or do creative things or inject as much personalities as you possibly could. But otherwise, I think there's a lot of pros to this, and I think it's something that we're going to be looking into adopting a similar workflow here at Litmus.
Yeah, I think you made the point that it's he works on a very large team. It's a lot faster paced than a lot of people typically have to deal with, and dealing with a lot of people makes things difficult. So it's I think that's an amazing process for larger teams. It gets everybody on the same page. Everybody knows exactly what they're working with. Having that process set up alleviates a lot of the pain points that you typically run into. So yeah, definitely, especially with teams, I think this is going to be the standard moving forward. So it's cool to see a publication like Smashing Magazine giving it some room and kind of introducing that web design audience to email a little bit more. Very cool stuff.
And I'm definitely interested to see how SaaS and email sort of progresses. You know, we're seeing things like SMACs and web design and whatnot. And I think there's going to be a lot of that transitions to email design and the way we structure things, especially with how messy and cluttered email can be. I think there's a lot of advantages to something like SaaS that can help email developers with.
Absolutely. So. Very cool.
All right. I want to share a simple little tool that I discovered recently, and it's called UnGrid. And it's basically four lines of CSS as a simple table-based responsive CSS grid system. And it's only 97 bytes big. That's it. It's super simple and it's super easy. So I know you're probably thinking like, okay, Kevin, why are you sharing this for email? Because this is just, you know, a little like web design framework. It may be table-based, but this isn't going to work in email, right? And it's not, but I think one of the interesting things that you see in web design right now is a lot of prototyping and wireframing in the browser. And I'm not sure that email has totally adopted that yet, but if you use something like this, where you're thinking with a table-based and sort of table-first approach for design, this can allow you to sort of quickly prototype and wireframe some email ideas right in the browser without needing to necessarily jump into exact table structure that you would have in an email. You know, this is something that you can sort of prototype more quickly, play around with more ideas, and sort of, you know, just come up with different layout ideas this way. And it's simple because you can define percentage widths on the columns and cells, and you can add as many like cells as you want, and it'll just adapt to whatever size the full width is. So I just thought it was really simple, really easy to use and get started with. And it's something that email developers can just sort of mix and match and come up with different pattern ideas, I think, to prototype right in the browser.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I love how compact this is. It's very clever. It's a very fun thing to play around with. I mean, there's some pretty intense grid frameworks out there, especially for web design. So it's cool to see something this simple and easy to use, and it's refreshing to see something like this. And like you said, it's great for something that simple is very easy to pick up and start playing around with different layouts and trying to experiment with new things. So it's this very, very cool.
Yeah, and it uses the display table and table layout fixed and display table cell. It uses what I think it's interesting how web design is now starting to use a lot more of a table display property. You're kind of seeing that as a rise. So it's interesting. They're not actually using tables to lay out websites and whatnot, but they are using it as a display because they realize how important it is for modular components, which their modular design is huge in web design now. How important just, you know, displaying things as tables can be, which I think is kind of funny how it's almost sort of reverting back to table-based structure. It's a table, but it's not a table.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked with a designer once that we were dealing with responsive navigation. Instead of actually doing it the clean kind of semantic way, he just slapped links in a table and went about his day. It's funny to see stuff like that cropping up more and more now. Very cool.
All right, now I want to dive into the new kid on the block, Office 365 Outlook web app. It's the new web app from Outlook and Microsoft. and it is definitely hands down the worst email client you will ever find. It's, I think it's worse than Lotus Notes. I mean, would you agree, Jason? I mean,
I think it's right up there. Yeah, it's doing some pretty shady things here. So
it's right up there. So let's dive into what's actually happening with Outlook Web App. Why do you need to know about it? Why do you need to care? Or what, you know, what are the key things about this? What are the highlights? So let me know if this, any of this sounds familiar, Jason. All CSS and the head is removed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We know that. Okay. So you're like Gmail. We got it. Okay. No CSS in the head. Been there, done that as email designers.
We can deal with that. Yeah,
all classes. Yeah. All classes and IDs are removed from all elements.
Ouch. Yeah. That hurts.
Okay. All right. That's tough. But you know, if you're not responsive, okay, cool. Let's just inline everything. All right. Well, all inline styling is stripped on link and image tags.
That one's a killer. That one hurts a lot.
Yeah, hurts a lot. It has a lack of text decoration, none on support anchors because it strips the tag, so you can't really effectively style your links, and your images are wonky. And there's generally noticeable gaps with images here. So now what you need to do to fix your images, you need to align every single image, which wasn't necessarily required before. So you need to set an align HTML attribute on your actual image. Or what else you could do is you can actually wrap the image in a div and set a height on the div which matches the height of the element. And then you can essentially overwrite that styling, you know, with classes for other email clients if you need to, which is totally wonky, but it's doable.
It's a lot of bloat I don't want to have to deal with.
And then this is just so wacky. It actually will take certain inline styles and it won't make it an inline style. It will then make it an HTML tag. So if you use, for example, font weight bold, it will convert that to a B tag outside of the text. It won't have that inline styling. It will automatically take it out, which is just why? Like it takes work to be that bad and you know, it takes a ton of work to render the code like that.
Absolutely. I love this next one. This font size property gets converted to a font tag with a span inside that font tag that has the size of the original font size property. So instead of just supporting inline style, let's add two extra tags and apply the style to that one. It's just, it makes no sense.
Yeah. Some other quick points. Don't use an all white color. So, you know, your FFFFFF, hexadecimal color, just you can't use it. Got to do it, like change it ever so slightly. So it's not just that. It doesn't work on links too well. Doesn't like it. And, oh, the other thing is using align center on a table cell doesn't center a nested table cell. So this means that you now need to have align attribute on all of your table elements, not just your TD elements, which may have been a different way to structure your email than it was previously. So I mean, these are just the many things. James White wrote up this article. It's definitely the best findings of Office 365 Outlook web app so far. He has code examples. He takes you through it. We highly recommend you have a deep dive into it. Luckily, Office 365 is not even a blip on the radar in terms of adoption or usage, which is a good thing. It's not even really showing up yet. So hopefully that stays the same. But in case you need to account for this, or in case you happen to have an audience where this is a growing size of your list or your audience, you know, here's a list of some quick fixes so far. And this is only, I think, kind of, you know, just scratching the surface as to what this email client, quote unquote, actually does to your email.
It's definitely the resource you want. Check it out.
Yeah. And Office 365, because it's so wonky, it actually is in the product roadmap for Litmus. So it will be coming up into Litmus soon enough as an email client.
You guys can enjoy all the fun and see how your emails run under there. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about something else that's typically been pretty wonky in email. Video and email. Anne over at Style Campaign, who doesn't blog often, but when she does, it's usually on an epic scale, posts this great article about video and email that's just going through all the different methods that people have available to them to include video and email. Video's always been kind of the holy grail of email. People want to use it in email, but it typically isn't supported very well across clients. So she gives a great breakdown of everything that you could possibly do to get that video in your email. Everything from using static images with a play button to kind of give that idea of video and linking people through to a landing page with a video on it, through to personalizing stills, which is pretty interesting, using animated GIFs. Team GIF Kevin, deal with it. We also have cinemagraphs, which a lot of people that might read the Litmus blog, we did an animated GIF post a while back and use this House of Cards GIF from Netflix, which is amazing. I love it. It's one of my favorites. She brings that up, and then she also talks about doing things like video GIFs, which work on the same technology, but are typically longer in length, a lot larger file sizes. JPEG push, which Kevin, you and I talked about this. We'd never really been exposed to this technique that well before, so it's interesting to see her talk about that. And then some newer stuff using HTML5 video, which Kevin, you've experimented with before. We've actually used in one of our Litmus emails, which Kevin posted a great write-up on it on our blog. But yeah, it's a great article. It's especially great because she goes through and lists some of the pros and cons of each approach. So it's nice to kind of see what you could pull off, how well it'll work for your team. So much of email is about knowing your audience and seeing those pros and cons of each approach really lets you kind of hone in on the technique that'll work well for you. I know you love this post too, Kevin. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, great write-up to just kind of, it's an overview not only of everything about like video actually in email, but just sort of how you would use video with email, all the different scenarios. And so I thought it was a great write-up from that perspective. Things from a still image, which is still probably the most popular use for video and email. We may not necessarily think as, you know, it being a cutting edge use case of video and email, but it's definitely the de facto way to sort of engage your audience with video. And there's still, you know, a lot of pros with being able to take your audience to a place where you want to direct them to. You know, you're not keeping them confined to an email client. You can put them on a landing page where you can further help guide their actions and engage with whatever content you want there. There's definitely the animated GIF, #TeamGIF out there. You know what it is?
It's wrong is what it is.
It's not wrong. Yeah, just you can tweet like #TeamGIF or #TeamGIF, you know, to thoughts, #email design podcast. We'll let you know, we'll battle it out. We'll battle it out. But yeah, the animated GIFs are definitely becoming an increasing trend because a lot of the webmails are supporting it now. And it's definitely the most supported across all email clients. And so I love the example of the House of Cards one, probably one of my favorite emails all year, just because, I mean, Frank Underwood is epic and just the animation to go with it. Netflix, that was like the perfect hype email from Netflix. And honestly, I think Redbox does some of my favorite GIFs in email. So they do whenever they have like a new movie that they want you to watch or pick up or whatnot. They actually have like a trailer like a GIF of that video, and they don't do it all the time, which is nice. They kind of pick their spots, so it's still a unique thing. But they've done some of my favorite things. You know, this is an example of The Hobbit we have here that Anna showed, but they also have done things like Superman and Melissa McCarthy, like comedy movies I've seen. It just kind of smacks you in the face too, especially if you're in like Gmail or a webmail client where you're not really expecting to see actual animation. Yeah. That's really great. I was definitely intrigued by the JPEG push until I had read this article. I'd never even heard of it. And so I think it's probably not the best implementation just because it's a little bit choppy when you play the video. But it does have pretty good support, which is interesting. I would still lean on, you know, using a GIF instead of a JPEG push. But it's a really innovative use of video that I never would have thought of before. And I guess the other key one now, too, is actual HTML5 video and email. I think we're starting to see this more. It's starting to get more support across clients, which is great. And so you can even do things like HTML5 video background, which we've done. That only worked in Apple Mail and Outlook 2011. It didn't even work on phones. The phones and the tablets didn't even support it on iOS. But we're starting to see more support for it. So I would say you'll probably see HTML5 for larger things. you know, larger animations or larger periods of times where you want something, and then GIFs for something smaller. Because the problem with GIFs is that, you know, they can become very big to download and they mm-hmm. don't download quickly. Where sometimes a video, even if it's the same size, you can sort of preload it and have better performance around an actual video and email. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of my key takeaways for it. But it was a great write-up from Anna, and I would definitely check it out to see what really fits you and your audience.
Absolutely. All right, moving on. As per usual, we like to take a look at some of the happenings in the Limitless community, talk about some of our favorite posts, some things that are getting a lot of feedback on there. So, Kevin, this was one of your posts that you liked. I'll let you chat about this one a little bit.
Yeah, so we wanted to go over this simple new Yahoo change because it's just so easy to implement. It's such a quick win in email, which you typically don't really see. And so in case you hadn't noticed, Yahoo is now taking your emails and sort of slamming them to the left, and they're not giving you a full width under your typical email. And we actually had this happen at Limitless. And if you're watching the podcast right now, you can see an example, or you can look at the show notes later on. But yeah, it just wouldn't extend to the full width. There was this new change in Yahoo. And so whatever your content container width was essentially what that width was displaying. And so basically there was a big panic in the Litmus community. It was like, oh, what's happening with Yahoo Mail? What, you know, what's going on? It was one of those great scenarios where the Litmus community really came through, and Mark Robbins actually came up with a quick fix for it. All you need to do is add table-layout as your CSS property, and then with a value of fixed for your inline styles to your outer container for your table. And essentially, when you fix it, that will then just force Yahoo to display it to a full width. So that outer width table should be a width of 100%. And it's honestly a best practice to have your outer tables with the width of 100% and sort of optimize, you know, breaking down your email from there, your structure from there. So you only need to add it to that outer one. You don't need to put it in a reset style per se. You know, you could create a new class for this and have it inlined or however you want to manage it. But it's really just that simple of a fix, and you should have no more issues with Yahoo Mail sort of not displaying at full width anymore.
Perfect. Great summary. I can't add anything to that. All right, moving on.
Nice and easy.
Yeah. Michael in the community brought up an interesting case of DPI scaling in Outlook 2007 to 2013. This is something that not everybody's going to see. It kind of depends on your settings in Outlook, as well as whether or not you're using a high DPI screen, which is more and more common these days. So I think we're probably going to be running into issues like this a little bit more frequently. But he has this great write-up describing the problem, and then he actually goes in and finds some great fixes for taking care of it. So basically what's happening is Outlook 2007 2013, they use Word for the rendering engine. Everybody typically knows that it's an awful thing. But what's happening is on high DPI screens, Word is going in and it's essentially changing pixel-based values to relative units, which are points. So anything you have that's clearly defined as a pixel width is being changed to a relative unit that will adapt depending on the settings of your screen and what display resolution you're looking at things. So this leads to things like tables being just kind of really wonky looking. Your text will be resized. Images will be blowing out tables. It'll destroy emails. So this is a great write-up of how to fix that. And basically it comes down to a couple of things you want to do. If you're running into this, you want to apply those pixel widths to your table cells using inline styles, and Outlook will go in and convert those to points. And if you're using percentage-based widths, which a lot of people are doing these days, if you're taking advantage of fluid tables, then you don't really have to worry too much because you're already using a relative unit. It's not going to affect it that much. So you want to use those pixel widths on inline styles and just kind of account for what Outlook's going to do when they're changed to relative units. Then he has this other great hack to inject this XML into the head of your email. And basically what it's doing is setting up some very specific office settings that it will read that allows you to control those pixels per inch on your screen, because that's where all of this comes into play. Those high DPI screens, they pack more pixels per inch into the screen, and that's what affects your email. So you, using this hack, you have a little bit more control over what it's actually doing in your email. You can set it up and account for that happening. He has a couple other things in here. It's very interesting to actually see somebody go through and find out exactly what's going on and kind of talk about those fixes. Have you run into this before, Kevin?
No, I haven't. And we actually have a pretty big Outlook audience here at Litmus. It's about 30 to 40%, depending on what email they send out. But we haven't really ever gotten too many complaints about this issue, but there's definitely been a lot of posts in the Litmus community about it, and other users have been seeing problems and issues. So I think it's one of those scenarios where just try to account for it. It should be easy enough here. Just insert the special markup for your HTML tag at the top, and you know, just that simple conditionalized Outlook content, which can define the pixels per inch there with the VML or the XML. And, you know, just try to account for it. And I think it really highlights how we need to be thinking about larger resolutions more and more.
Yeah, absolutely.
The new devices, especially with mobile, we need to, as email designers, start to think about designing for Retina more and designing for higher resolution displays. So just think about how you can do that. You know, maybe you need to double the size for maybe not all your images, but some of your key images. Maybe you need to think about using CSS or, you know, bulletproof things that aren't required for actual images or rendering engines, things that are much more scalable. So we need to try to think about more ways to incorporate those techniques, which are really being used very well on the web right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, great post, though. I love that people in the community are getting this detailed and posting this information. It's a huge help for all of us. Yeah, definitely check it out.
Absolutely. So now we're going to go over our favorite emails of the month. Be sure to tweet your favorite emails of the month at hashtag email design podcast. And we might just feature one of yours on the show today, which we are actually going to do for a user submitted one. Jason, who do we have?
I believe Dan Denny wrote this one into us. He tweeted about it a little while back. It's an email from Organizing for Action. And he especially loved that you can't see it in the scope. I'll show you a picture of the what he tweeted out, but it uses a dynamic map that's tied directly into his location. So it's very, very specific targeting, and it's using dynamic images, which is awesome. But it's a great look at how different people are using this targeting to send these really personalized emails. And it's a good-looking email. I'm not that happy that it's pretty much all image-based. That kind of sucks. They could have done a lot of this in HTML, which would have been cool. But as far as making this very personal to the recipient, then it's a great example.
Yep, I agree. Just the personalization was really cool to look at. And so it says, hey, there's only two donations remaining or we only need to have two more donations from St. Petersburg. Shows a map. It knows you're there. It's a great call to action, really engaging. And so that was sort of just the key highlight to point out for that actual email. My favorite email of the month came from Pure360. And there wasn't anything over the top about this email, but there are just so many solid things about this email. Like when you think about email, you're just like, wow, this is what really makes up a great a really well-constructed email, one that I really love. And the thing that I like about it most is that everything is pretty much HTML for the most part. It uses images where it does, but it's very bulletproof. It has bulletproof buttons. It has actual live text. It doesn't have any images with text, so to speak. And you can just tell, like, I'm on a high resolution now, right? And everything looks great. They have this really cool animated GIF at the top of the screen, which is very colorful. It has the month August on it because it's its August newsletter with a bunch of new images, like, just kind of flashing back and forth. And it was great use of typography. And it's not completely responsive, but it's adaptive. And they also have pre-header text. So, I mean, there's just a lot of solid things here to really, really like. And it's something that it's like, hey, this is an email that I want to keep interacting with because it's so well constructed. The design is really nice. It's very colorful. It's very intuitive. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I thought it was just a solid email to feature for this month.
Yeah, absolutely. I think solid's the main word there. It's not every email has to be this amazing, innovative thing. If you're sending emails out like this, though, then you're definitely doing something right. And they have a great base to work on. And it's something that I can imagine works very, very well for them. So, yeah, great email. Mine was this email from, who is the sender on here? It's a photography studio, I believe. TotallyRad.com, GetTotallyRad.com. But it's, I loved the imagery in this. It's very striking. The design's very, very modern, very colorful. The type's great. My big complaint is that it's entirely image-based. That being said, they still make sure that those images are optimized for mobile. All the text is very readable on a small screen. The images look fantastic. It scales very well. So again, it's one of those examples that I might not like the implementation of it technically, but it works well from them, and it looks beautiful across devices, and it's a cool email. I love the design on this.
Yeah, I think we're so used to seeing really small and narrow email designs, and this just makes the email feel big.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the images. Yep. I mean, this is, I'm just kind of guesstimating, this looks about 800 pixels wide, mm-hmm. maybe more, maybe a little bit less, but it just feels so much bigger with how big the images are. And again, it might be, you know, it might perform worse in some scenarios. Yeah. You never know. But from a design perspective, it's a nice one column design, but it's very big and it just feels very powerful. It's very striking.
Absolutely.
You know, you wouldn't necessarily see an email like this all the time in your inbox. So I think it's kind of cool, you know, even though it is mainly image based for the most part, I think it does a great job of the actual design, the colors they use, the typography they use. Mm-hmm. I think they kind of get away with it because of all that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I actually saw this for the first time on my phone and was immediately, just kind of drawn into those images, and it's beautiful email. I'd love to see some live text in there, but I'm picky, so call what you will.
Right, so let's talk about upcoming events in the email design community. It's only 1 week away, the Email Design Conference in Boston.
I'm getting nervous. Got a lot of slides have to build out.
Jason and I have a lot of presentations to get through between workshops and actual panels and talks. We're not quite prepared yet, so
we're getting there.
We hope it comes out. Yeah. But yeah, we'll get there. We'll get done. We're really looking forward to it. There's going to be a Dribbble meetup on Monday night for those of you getting in early. So it's an email community / design community meetup. We're sponsoring it with Dribbble, Shopify, and Campaign Monitor. So special thanks to all them. And so that's going to be great. That's the same day as the workshops. Then we get into the actual conference on Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday night after party, going to be nuts. And we also have a Litmus office party on Thursday night, mm-hmm. in case any of you are still hanging around the city. By that time, there's going to be a crazy office party at Litmus headquarters in Cambridge. So I'm totally looking forward to it. I can't wait. Yeah. What are you really looking forward to, Jason, for the conference?
I can't even tell you everything that I'm looking forward to. The Dribbble meetup, for one, is going to be awesome. It'll be a great way to relax after a full day of workshops that Kevin, you and I, with a couple other great speakers, are running.
And the co-founders of Dribbble are going to be there,
too,
which
absolutely.
Is really cool.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing. There's just so many good speakers. I can't wait to see. I hope I get to catch some of these. I'll be doing some talks and kind of logistical stuff in the background, so I hope I get to see a lot of these talks, but we'll see. It's hard to say which talk I'm most looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to John Foreman's talk, more data-driven stuff in email. He is the data scientist for MailChimp. That's going to be awesome. Is there any specific one you can't wait to hear, Kevin?
Nope. I'm personally just looking forward to meeting all the email geeks out there. There's a lot of people I've known on Twitter for a while, haven't met. And so, I'm pretty much just looking forward to meeting people, interacting, and I'm just looking forward to that more than any specific talk or whatnot. I think everybody's going to crush it, kill it, bring something unique to the conference. But I think what's really powerful is the true email designers and developers in the industry. This is the one place they come to. They come to this conference. So
absolutely.
I'm excited about just getting together in the room, in one room with all these people.
I'm talking about what we love most. Should be good.
Yeah. And be sure to sign up for updates if you aren't going to the conference at litmus.com/conference. You can subscribe to receive updates. We'll be releasing the video packages and selling the video slides, all the content from the conference after the conference. So be sure to sign up there.
All's coming up is a huge conference. It's Exact Targets Connections, which is September 23rd through 25th in Indianapolis. Our very own marketing director, Justine Jordan, Indianapolis born, I don't know, born, raised, grew up there, I guess. But she's working at Exact Target and raves about this conference. I have never been to this show before, but I've only heard amazing things about it. And it's a huge one. It's one of the biggest marketing conferences in the country.
Yeah, not just like email, yeah. Just like conferences of the year.
Yeah,
big.
It's huge. Yeah. As far as I know, they completely take over Indianapolis for all intents and purposes, and that's Exact Target's home ground, and it's supposed to be an amazing show. A lot of good speakers. They have music acts. They have, it's one of those conferences, they have everything there. So if you can go, if not, I'm sure we're all going to be following along on Twitter and stuff anyway. So.
Yep, and Litmus will be there. We'll have a booth there, and the team will be there. So if you want to catch a, you know, snag a Litmus shirt or some Litmus swag, you know, just be sure to follow at Litmus app on Twitter and interact and meet up with some of the team. I'm not exactly sure who's all going, but yeah, I know Justine will be there for a fact.
Yep,
and some of the rest of the marketing team.
Yeah,
will
I think
be there
it's going to
well.
Be her. I want to say Matt Bird's going, and then Danielle, who heads up our customer support, I believe, is attending. As well as David, who's the CFO, and will be attending. And it's a great chance to meet the Litmus team and talk about Litmus, get some demos, get some great T-shirts, buttons, whatever, you know. So definitely check us out, and I'd love to see you there.
All right, so before we sign off on this edition of the Email Design Podcast, I just want to let you all know that Jason is doing a cool little campaign. He's calling it Campaign Critique. On his own personal website, and essentially you can submit any email to him and he will critique it for you for free and make it a blog post on his site. So, and he'll critique you about all sorts of things, design, marketing. Jason, why don't you explain it? Cause you know it a little bit more than, you know, I can explain.
Yeah. I was kind of inspired by, the last year's email design conference. We did this live optimization session. So that was kind of the thinking behind this. I really enjoyed that. I think a lot of people got a lot of value out of that. Essentially, we looked at people's email designs, we threw them up on the screen and critiqued them in real time. We looked at what was working, what might not have been working so well, gave them some design feedback. So I kind of wanted to translate that into blog form. So that's essentially what it is. You can go to my website. It's rodriguezcommaj.com/campaign-critique and submit your email, talk a little bit about the goal behind it. Send me a link to that email, and if I like it, have time, then I'll post right up on my blog, and there's two up there right now. Feel free to check them out. It's just fun to do. It's fun to see what people are doing out there in the wild and talk about those designs, how they might work, how they could be improved, and hopefully everybody learns something from it. I've been learning a lot from it, just publishing these, so yeah, check it out. I'd love to see your emails and give you some feedback on them.
Do it, people. You won't regret it.
I promise.
All right. Well, that's, yeah. All right. Well, that's been this episode of the Email Design Podcast. Just reminding you to check out all shows at emaildesignpodcast.com. Every show, all the show notes and links will be available there. And catch the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, coming soon. And any place else you want, just let us know. And be sure to tweet out the hashtag Email Design Podcast with any and all feedback. We're looking forward to it. So, Jason, it's been another good episode. Hopefully we can make it back for a third one.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Catch you next time on the Email Design Podcast.